Hold questions in the committee motion until after lunch. And briefly, John's got an introduction to make.
I just wanted to recognize State Senator Mark Montigny from the city of New Bedford here, who's come down to watch for a while and been a great friend of the fishing industry and fishermen for many years in New Bedford and Massachusetts.
Welcome, Senator.
Thank you.
I imagine. Okay, Doug.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Doug Potts from the regional office, but I'm here today as the chair of the PDT FMAT for the SBRM amendment, hopefully moving into final vote on this action. See if I have this. All right. Today's presentation, briefly, we're just going to go remind everyone a little bit of the history of the SBRM amendment and how we got where we are. We'll talk about the SBRM amendment document that was a draft document that was out for public comment. The structure and the alternatives that were in that, and then we'll touch on the public comments that were received on the document. And then there was, in addition, there was a the council had an ad hoc SBRM committee that met in January to also review this document. So some of this is repetition from that presentation, but we'll touch on it. The SBRM is required through sort of dictated by several sections of Magnuson Act. Section 303.11 there is the requirement that all FMPs establish a standardized reporting methodology to assess the amount and type of bycatch. National Standard 9, of course, requires to minimize bycatch and bycatch mortality. And we're also dictated in this by actually the definition section of Magnuson, which actually defines bycatch specifically and even fish, such that this will exclude marine mammals and birds from the SBRM system. Previously, the court rulings in Oceana v. Evans 1 and 2, which were for Groundfish Amendment 13 and Scallops Amendment 10 in 2004, found that the actions failed to fully evaluate methodology and incorporate an SBRM. Now, strictly speaking, those rulings applied only to those FMPs, but the councils decided to take a more holistic approach to it. They set up an FMAT PDT to create an omnibus amendment that was implemented in 2007 to incorporate SBRM into all the FMPs at one time and cover that. That action was then challenged in court. Initially, the district court found in favor of the government on all counts. However, the appeals court overturned the district court's action, found fault with one aspect of the seven aspects of the SBRM process, but in the process of that, vacated the whole amendment. This was in 2011. In response, the councils formed a new PDT-FMAT specifically targeted to address the deficiencies as identified by the court and to actually also include a few minor additional changes that came out of the three-year review process that coincidentally also occurred in 2011. They just happened to be the same year. The SBRM amendment as a whole is a means of explaining the methods and processes to monitor and assess bycatch in our region. It determines the current, we take the current methods that we use and describe whether or not any of those need to be modified or supplemented. It establishes standards of precision, and it also considers accuracy of estimates as well as the precision of say, and then the SBRM process would then cover the amendment for all of the FMPs in our region. So that's what we're doing with this action, to incorporate all of that. The action as a whole just has a slightly different structure than some. I think this was intended in the original 2007 to introduce the new and somewhat unfamiliar setup of the SBRM. I think everyone's a little more familiar with it at this point. Does some background. We go through a description of all the fisheries, all the FMPs in the area, in the region, and then start bringing in this concept of fishing modes, which is a gear area-based description. It is a means of identifying trips before those trips set out when you don't know what those trips are going to necessarily catch, and allocating observers based on that fishing mode. It then goes into descriptions of the various bycatch reporting mechanisms that are available in the region and whether or not those are appropriate for SBRM. A more detailed statistical description of how the sampling design is been set up, and then discussions of precision analysis in Chapter 5. We then move through alternatives, which is, and the environmental consequences, more standard issues of EAs. Much of the catch data for descriptions of the fisheries and the fishing modes has been updated in the new document. Some people have noted that Chapter 5, some of the information still contains data from the 2004 fishing year. That was a factor that a lot of that analysis was done at that time, was sort of independent of a specific fishing year's information, and redoing it just to have newer data wasn't going to actually be more descriptive or include more information. It was just going to take an awful lot of staff time to do. So items in Chapter 5 were specifically left to 2004. They're still illustrative of the process. Briefly, there are, as I said, seven overall components of SBRM. This action shows the preferred alternatives that were adopted in 2007 or their equivalents. In 2007, there was a simple sixth prioritization process, was one item. That's what was vacated by the the court. This new amendment actually splits that out into three separate subcomponents to identify the various things that the court found fault with, specifically a funding trigger and then the reallocation of observers if that trigger is met. In addition, there were two other alternatives that were touched on in this new action, you know, that differ from the 2007 amendment, having to do with the information that was brought out of the three-year review in 2011. Just touching on these new alternatives that were not in the previous amendment. Specifically, it's option C here on this slide, the integration allocation approach with importance filters. The three-year review looked back at the performance of the system over the previous years and found that there was a something called a gray cell filter, an unlikely filter that was used, incorporated in the original process. It turned out to be unnecessary. It was a redundant filter and didn't actually change any allocations. So rather than conduct unnecessary work, it was suggested coming out of that FMAP that that would be removed. So while preserving the original alternatives, including the one that was implemented in 2007, the suggestion from the PDT was that we simply have a new option that would then just remove that gray cell filter and not have to move that forward. Since 2011, that has actually been status quo. That's been what the center has been using to allocate observers more recently. Under element five, the framework adjustment provisions, like a lot of actions, without some measure of framework adjustments, you would make another amendment in order to change items coming out of this amendment. This one would allow some adjustments to various components, including reporting, funded observers, fishing modes, et cetera, CV standard, through either frameworks and annual adjustment process, which was what was incorporated in 2007. And then we have a new option that was brought up by the FMAT, so the PDT. I work at the mid-council more often, that specifically would highlight that the council action would not actually be needed to change fishing modes. This was identified in the three-year review as a potential hindrance that when things like the rule trawl, haddock separator trawl were introduced into the fisheries, it was sort of important to assign observers to those as separate fishing modes that were anticipated to have different bycatch characteristics than regular trawls. However, to spend the time and wait for a council to formally incorporate that through a council action seemed like an unnecessary time to, you know, expense to increase the scientific accuracy of the estimate. So in this option, the council would not need to take action. However, council recommendations to the center would certainly be possible to change fishing modes if that were the case. So the center would be able to change fishing modes each year. However, it would notify the councils if any changes were made, so that it would be highlighted in an annual report that a fishing mode was added or for some reason removed from the report. So that's that change. And as I said, the primary focus of the PDT was coming up with alternatives for a prioritization process to address the deficiencies as identified by the court. So this breaks down into basically three options, three components of this. One is a funding trigger, how we determine what the available funds are for SBRM in a given year. If there's not enough funds to reach the 30% CV across all fishing modes and species combinations, then there would be, we'd move on to part two, where if the trigger is met, how are we reassigning sea days to adjust for that? And then the FNET sort of added sort of late in the process to close the loop, the idea of a minimum pilot coverage, just minimum amount of coverage on each fishing mode. But what if sometime in the future the funding was so limited we couldn't actually meet minimum pilot coverage on all fleets? Just to make sure we covered all bases, this hasn't happened. We don't foresee it happening. But if it happened, there would be some fleets that wouldn't get coverage in order for other fleets to have a meaningful level of coverage. So we'll go through those. As said, 6.1, this is the funding trigger, and this alternative is where we tie in with Wendy's presentation that we just saw regarding funding. The current sort of status quo alternative in this was to use the various funding sources and the various limitations and expectations on those, as well as management priorities, and identify what is available for SBRM. This would actually be and then the second one would be to identify specific funding sources dedicated to SBRM, and those, you go forward with those specific items being dedicated to the SBRM. As I said, the first part of that is to identify specific. The first one, using the current things, although it's slightly different than what was in the previous amendment and actually was found deficient by the court, that included any operational constraint on SBRM could trigger prioritization. This is specific to funding. It is potentially suspect for being found deficient by the court again. So that's why the status quo is a little bit questionable on that one. Moving on to the actual, the new alternative in this, the dedicated funding lines. Here we see the four funding lines that were identified by the PDT as having been historically at some level between 2010 and 2012 used for SBRM. Here we see the average proportion of those funding lines that came to the Northeast region. As you said, the Northeast Observers Line, which was previously called the court-ordered groundfish observers line. It's been renamed. 98% of that came to the region. The 2% that didn't involved overhead through headquarters. It's a standard practice, but that is a dedicated line that comes to the region. The other three lines shown, Atlantic Coast Observers, is actually divided between our region, the Southeast region, and then some money in headquarters. We have historically gotten the larger percentage of that, but that's a divided line through headquarters. National Observer Program line is actually divided among all six regions and headquarters. And then there's a reducing bycatch line, which is also, I believe, divided among all regions to us. As you said, past performance doesn't necessarily predict future results. These are the proportions we've gotten in the past. They don't necessarily dictate what proportions we would get in the future. But this is sort of a representation of where that is. Funding from other sources may be available outside of SBRM. That's sort of the vision of the SBRM amendment. This includes MMPA observers, Endangered Species Act observers, such as at sea monitors that are funded through catch share lines. There could be additional lines as well. Although, as Wendy said, we may not be looking for new funding and additional increases in funding may be unlikely coming forward. This slide is where we actually tie in directly to Wendy's presentation. We'll cut off a couple of letters, but this shows where this year in 2014, where the various funding lines, how they've been used to fund observers across various priorities, including SBRM, additional days that are set aside to cover herring enclosed area coverage, that requirement for coverage in closed areas, and some National Observer Program money has been used for at-sea monitoring as well as other projects. And this shows you basically where under this SBRM amendment, where those funding lines would be dedicated to SBRM, where that would change, that those money for herring closed area would go away and would be under targeted to SBRM. The reason this sort of happens is because the court was very specific that it found problem with the agency having the discretion to determine whether or not funding went to SBRM, whether it triggered a shortfall, as it saw it, in SBRM funding. So to address that, the alternative would target the money that comes to the region, specifically into SBRM, and that's where I think we were highlighting previously that this removes a lot of discretion that currently is enjoyed by the region to use some of this money for other management purposes. To put this in some dollar amounts, we can see here in 2014, current status quo, SBRM has about 6,000 days. At-sea monitoring has gotten some of that money from those various funding lines. Again, herring closed areas, some marine mammal inshore fisheries, the total of 14,981 days. You see, if we implemented the SBRM amendment this year such that it had those funding restrictions, the same number of total days, however, some of those lines get zeroed out, that those days are not available. At-sea monitoring days drop a lot, and all that days get moved into SBRM. So a lot of fisheries would increase their SBRM coverage. Some fisheries that haven't had coverage recently would get coverage under the minimum pilot coverage requirement that I'll describe in a couple of minutes. But this does have an impact on how various fisheries are monitored and the discretion that the agency has to fund items. So I just wanted to highlight this is where it ties into the previous presentation. Moving away from the funding trigger, we're going to move into the prioritization process, how we rebalance if we have a funding constraint. There are three options of this. We talked about this. There's the status quo, something we're calling the proportional adjustment approach, and something called a penultimate sale approach. Not a very good descriptive title, but I'll talk through it. So the status quo identifies the current funding constraints, and it uses a blend of sort of ad hoc methods to determine C-day allocations and to meet various needs and balance those directions. As I said, this is similar to the previous process. It was found deficient by the court. It is slightly different in that it's strictly to funding rather than any operational constraints, but it is potentially subject to being criticized by the court again. The proportional approach was a formulaic approach that the PDT developed to identify, to basically rebalance days. In this process, we would deduct the minimum pilot coverage across fleets from the total sea days. We determine the shortfall, the proportional shortfall of days across all fleets. We then rescale all of the various fishing modes by that shortfall percentage and then add back in the minimum pilot coverage days and other days. So to show sort of graphically how some of this works, here we're sort of identifying in 2012, this is part of the illustrative example that was one of the a more full example of this is part of the appendices to the document. We see that there are several lines that were SBRM applicable and some non-SBRM days, but all through this, in this particular example, there were about 3,257 days that would have been part of SBRM in that particular year, and several that were not. We move that 3,000 days forward into this table, and I think hopefully people are somewhat familiar with this setup. This is how we've come up with the C-day needs. The various rows are the fishing modes, again, gear, area, mesh group. The columns are the species or species groups that are then tied together. The one purple line, scallop dredge, is the industry-funded row. The red cells indicate the particular cell that is driving coverage for that fishing mode. So you see in the first one, red crab, it's the highest demand for days in order to reach 30% CV. And so on the far right column, you'll see that that becomes the total needed for that particular row. In this, you'll see that the total number of agency-funded days needed would be 18,000. As we mentioned earlier, we didn't have that amount of money in 2012 or to fund that full number of days. So this is harder to read, a little small, but I think it's in your packages if you can read it. It basically walks through that there is minimum pilot coverage, which in this case is 3 trips per quarter based on average length of trip. So on that first column, it's 30 days. The second column, the total number of days needed for that 30% CV across that particular fleet. The next day just deducts minimum pilot coverage from that, so that's the total you would need. In this case, we had only 12% of the funding needed to reach total number of days. So the next column is everybody reduced down to 12% of the total previously needed. It impacts all of the various fishing modes and brings them all down proportionally. Finally, then you add back in the minimum pilot coverage days and days that are funded through other processes, such as catch shares, marine mammals, ESA coverage, and you would finally then determine how many days each individual fishing mode would be allocated for the year. So that works through that particular process. The penultimate approach is a slightly more nuanced approach that was developed by the PDT. And this is a little harder to explain. I'll try to work through it. Within each day, within each fleet, we list the days required in a descending order. We find the differences between these days, and I'll have following slides to actually work through this a little more clearly. Rank those differences, and then sequentially remove individual sea day needs until we reduce the total number of needed sea days to meet the shortfall. Again, these are fairly small, but here we see a series of the fleets, and each row has been sort of reorganized rather than always the same order to show greatest number of sea days down to minimum pilot coverage as being the smallest number on the right. So the top one, mid-Atlantic small mesh otter trawl, the highest number of sea days is by red crab, followed by turtles, followed by small mesh groundfish, flukescup sea bass. So that's the descending order you see. You then identify what's the difference between each cell and the cell next to it, and that would be the number of sea days you could save by dropping a particular sea day. And then you rank those in descending order. You see here what's row 8, otter trawl, New England large mesh, is number 1 because dropping from red crab to flukescup sea bass would save 3,091 days just by moving that one order. And then continually moving down, there are some sequential notes. You'll note in row 2 up there, the second row down, mid-Atlantic large mesh otter trawl, although the drop from turtles to dogfish is 2,600 days, and the previous red crab to turtles is 2,300 days. You have to go through the first to get to the second. So they're in sequential order as you move down. You could then eliminate, again, sequentially, individual cells until you reach a level that is able to meet the funding constraints of that particular year. And then, as in the previous one, you add in days from other funding sources to get the target coverage for the year. So in this case, you see they're all prioritized. This intent of this option is to reduce the number of needed days while affecting the fewest number of cells, numbers of fishing mode and species combinations, so that you have the fewest number that exceed the 30% CV target. Slightly different sort of graphical way of looking at this. This is a graph we have of CV versus the number of sea days needed to achieve it. And the dotted line across it shows the 30% CV level. Each different species has a different line on there. In this case, you see the red line is red crab. That dominates it. If you eliminate that one line, you drop back to the next highest line, saving a significant number of sea days while impacting only one species group. A slightly different example. This is just to illustrate that in one case, in mid-Atlantic small mesh otter trawl, the blue line, which is the penultimate approach, would result in more days than proportional approach. However, mid-Atlantic large mesh in this particular example, the proportional approach ended up in more sea days than the penultimate approach. It doesn't just to show that neither one of these approaches necessarily results in more observer days for particular fleets every time. It has to do with the constraints and the estimators coming out of of what the seat A needs are for the 30% seat A. As I mentioned, there was an additional portion just added through the PDT to address whether or not funding would be below the minimum pilot coverage in a given year. As I said, minimum pilot coverage is sort of a concept of three trips per quarter using the average trip length to assign days. It's a means of assuring a usable amount of discard data from all the different fleets. However, if funding were below that minimum level, some fleets would lose coverage entirely. And so this is our attempt to look at how to address that. The three options were to assign that coverage sort of an ad hoc manner. One is to eliminate fleets that have the highest minimum pilot coverage. And the third is to eliminate the fleets with the highest ratio of minimum pilot coverage to the days absent in the previous year based on VTR data. The ad hoc option would have directed the RA and the science director to prepare proposal to the council that year if there was such a significant funding constraint that would detail the funding shortfall, make recommendations about the fleets to receive coverage, and detail some of the legal mandates involved. It's just so it'd be a report in sort of an ad hoc method. Going into the formulaic methods, since minimum pilot coverage is three trips per quarter on average trip length, eliminating based simply on the highest minimum pilot coverage needed for each fleet essentially targets fleets with the longest average trip length. If it's three trips and they have longer trips, those would be the ones eliminated. So it's a formulaic approach. It takes out discretion, but that's what the result of this option two would be, is that it would preferentially remove first trips fleets that have the highest average trip length. To sort of minimize that, the additional option was to come up where we have the highest minimum pilot coverage to the days absent ratio. In this effect, it essentially targets less active fleets, since the number of days absent can be sort of a driving factor, a fairly large number. It keeps coverage on fleets that were more active, that had more total days absent from port from VTRs in the previous year. And so it just sort of gives an example of, in a given year, hypothetically, if we had a funding shortfall, they sort of had to come up with a number that would be sufficiently short, which ones would be ranked and then eliminated. So these are fully explained more in the example section in the appendix, but those are the three examples we came up with for the alternative to minimum pilot coverage. The draft document went out for public comment on September 27th, which then subsequently went into the government closure immediately after that. And the comment period was open through October 27th. Some comments afterwards from the public and the council, we decided to go back out for additional public comment. We published a Federal Register notice on November 19th, reopened the comment period, and took comments through December 19th. In that time, through both those periods, there were three comments received. I think you all have copies of those three comments. I don't want to go through necessarily all the details of those, but if there are any questions on those, I'm happy to definitely address them. They were talked about more at the ad hoc committee meeting that happened in January. This is a table. It's a little bit harder to read. It does indicate the alternatives that did come out of that out of that ad hoc committee meeting. One thing I just to mention for number one, there was the status quo reporting requirements. Item two, the point was the option C. That's where I had mentioned previously the eliminating the gray cell filter, but still sticking with the integrated allocation approach with importance filters that we've been using for the last number of years. Option three, the portion three, the establishing a CV standard that was out of the original SBRM amendment. Item four, the reporting process, was to do a three-year review report, which is what we had in the previous one, as well as annual reports. There was some interest in that group, and I think that's probably discussed here, to develop those reports a little more cooperatively between council and center staff so that they are more usable by the council. There's definite push to make them more readable, reduce the length of the annual reports, and make them a little more targeted in discard reports. Item five, framework adjustments, again, was to allow framework and annual adjustments to change SBRM, except in the case of fishing modes, which could be changed without council action. Six, there was the three options, specific SBRM funding sources, using the penultimate cell approach for reallocating days, and removing days with the highest minimum pilot coverage to days absent ratio. And finally, there's an option for the industry-funded programs to be to allow for observer-provider approval standards to be in the regulations, as well as allow industry-funded observer programs to be incorporated through framework provisions. Those were both originally from the 2007 SBRM amendment and were not changed in this action. The schedule going forward, the idea in this would be if it is adopted by the council, the document would be then get completed, reviewed, and then face final submission to the agency, and then go through rulemaking with a target effective date of April 1st, 2015, which corresponds to the start of the observer fishing year. So there'd be a little time to do the incorporation of that. So with all that, I'll happily take any questions you have or if you want to break.
Yeah, thank you, Doug, for the presentation. I'm going to hold questions until after lunch. It's 12:35 right now. Let's try to be back at 1:30, and we'll go to questions and a motion from the committee.